The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the January-February issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we will hear from Southern Living Journal. Southern Journal. It's the back page of every magazine, and it's by Rick Bragg, B-R-A-G-G. We may remember that Rick is the one who interviewed Dolly Parton for those for that article that we read the first couple of episodes of February, I believe it was. And after we read that, we will get to as many as we can of the 25 places to visit in 2025. All right, that's curated just a bit in case we don't get to them all, for just the ones that have the most sensory experiences. Okay, the front cover of the magazine has in the background a cafe au lait colored wooden building of some sort. This is all blurred in the background. And the back of the cab of a flatbed pickup truck. And that has a white roof and a sky blue body, the rest of it. And the flat bed also is painted sky blue, but that paint is distressed. It's peeling off to reveal it looks like wood. Maybe it can be, but that's what it looks like, a wood to match the cafe au lait color of the building in the blurred background. And sitting at the end of that flat bed truck is Dolly Parton, sitting on the end of it. Dolly Parton sitting in her denim dress, which is bejeweled with, it has butterflies that of red and blue beads, or jewel-looking beads. And they're outlined, all their wings, their four wings, are outlined in gold beads. My dress zips up the front, but if you know Dolly, it's not zipped all the way. But she's wearing a red bracelet and red, huge red stone ring on her hands, which are holding the neck of a guitar that she is holding across her lap. And Dolly has a big smile, her head's thrown back, she might be laughing, and her faded eyeshadow is red, white, and blue. And as I said, she's holding a guitar that matches the coffee tones of the background. And long red lacquered nails, I might have said that already. And just below where she is sitting on the bumper of the flatbed pickup truck is a bumper sticker which shows the logo of Dollywood. And the print from top to bottom is January, February 2025, Southern Living, Dolly's Road Ahead, How the Queen of Country Keeps on Truckin', by Rick Bragg. Further down, 25 places to visit in 2025, plus Ivy Odom's Game Time Wings. Okay, and we'll start with the Southern Journal, which is at the back of the magazine. And this article, this essay is entitled, it's by Rick Bragg, and it's entitled The Speckled Beauty, The Sun Sets on an Awfully Good Dog. And listeners, about a quarter of the page, we have a drawing that appears to be in watercolors. And in the background of that painting, or just near the top of that painting, is a sunset. And on the horizon is an oversized, in the painting, a dog. He has a white, he or she has a white snout and brown, kind of tiger colored, and dark brown, dark and light brown around his eyes and ears, and his body appears to also be brown with some maybe black markings as well. The foreground is a green field, and there are three green trees at the top of the horizon and one green tree in the foreground of the horizon. And on the very foreground, at the bottom of this painting, is a man and woman looking toward the horizon, looking at the dog. The man has, we are looking at the backs of this couple. They both have brown hair, and they're both wearing blue. The man's wearing a blue jacket or shirt and coffee-colored trousers and shoes. And the woman is wearing a light blue dress. I can't quite see her shoes, but I can see that she is holding a walker. And the man has his hand on her back, on her upper back. The cabin's front porch faces west. Every day at sunset, every single day, an old woman and a sick dog sat side by side and watched as the light faded. And she would sing, "Life's evening sun is sinking low, a few more days and we must go to meet the deeds that we have done, where there will be no setting sun." The once great and terrible dog that she had named the Speckled Beauty watched the angled rays of light through the hickory trees and dozed. In a hard, mean, wicked world, it was a perfect and wonderful thing. "Do you want to go in now, baby?" she would ask. But he would not move yet. Speck always got two songs. Always. "You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you." And then she would put one hand on his fine, broad head. "Please don't take my sunshine away." They would rise in a single motion and go back in the house to watch the weather. Old women and old dogs tend to care about things like that. She would say over and over that he was her dog, and he would beat his tail against the floor. Every half hour, he got a snack, some kind of people food. He was fond of chicken. "Rick thinks you're his dog," she would whisper, "but we know." At her bedtime, after she closed her eyes, he followed me down the stairs, where he curled up on the floor at the foot of my bed. I went to sleep listening to him breathe in the dark. After being ill with cancer for many months, Speck died last year. It has taken me this long to finally come to grips with it, without crying like a small child, and to put his ending into words. I didn't want to do it at all, but my mother told me that I should, because he was more like a person than a pet. And you don't just let your loved ones vanish from this world without ceremony. She has faced up to so much death and pain in her later life. Young people might have crumbled. Old folks just keep going. That dog gave her joy. "I don't know what I will do now," she said. "But I know she will endure." It's odd, though. He had been, most of his days, an awful dog. He was so spectacular at being bad that I wrote a book about him, The Speckled Beauty. He bit me 19 times. He was a herding breed, a brilliant Australian shepherd gone bad. So he knew exactly what he was doing. But to my mother, He was gentle, like he understood everything. It occurred to me, as we buried him, that I didn't know where he came from or how old he was. I found him 7 years ago, starving on a ridgeline, and I didn't even want a dog. Now he sleeps under the trees in the pasture, in the most beautiful spot on this beautiful land. He is the last dog we will ever have. People say, nah, you'll get another one someday. But we won't. I am too tired and heartsick to try to make them understand. There is just such a hollow place here, but it is a kind of sacred thing. And the evening sun sinks into the trees without a word. Well, that essay did a little more work than we anticipated, so we're going to go on a little vacation here. Adventures in Travel and Culture, the South. Southern Living's 25 places to visit. Bucket List Destinations, 25 amazing places to visit in 2025. Mark your travel calendars. Our editors have scoured the South for what's new, notable, and next. And listeners, just in case we don't have time to read all of these, we're just going to start with the ones that appear to have the most sensory experiences. All right? So, this one is number 4 on their list, and it is Bentonville, Arkansas. It's in Bentonville, Arkansas, and it's called The Momentary. Attend a bluegrass festival at an innovative museum. Art in all its glorious forms. Visual exhibits, music, film, food, and dance is embraced at The Momentary, a free contemporary museum that, alongside the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, has changed the cultural landscape of Northwest Arkansas. This year, it celebrates its 5th birthday with a big party in February. And on May 16 and 17, the Freshgrass Festival, a showcase of bluegrass and progressive roots music, will return across multiple stages. Past headliners have included Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit and Molly Tuttle and Golden Highway. Molly Tuttle and Golden Highway. Wow. All right. The next one is Cape Canaveral. Actually, this was number 3. Cape Canaveral, Florida. Star of the Seas. Climb aboard Royal Caribbean's newest ship, setting sail in August. With 18 decks to wander and the capacity for more than 5,500 guests, Royal Caribbean's latest cruise ship is essentially a floating city. Star of the Seas will depart from Cape Canaveral with its maiden voyage planned for August 31. Travelers will have their choice of week-long Caribbean routes and all include a stop at Royal Caribbean's private island, Perfect Day at Coco Cay. The boat has 8 distinct neighborhoods, including the Hideaway, an adults-only area with a beach club feel and incredible ocean vistas. Number 7 is in New Orleans, Louisiana, and it is Preservation Hall. And listeners, we've got a photo of that here, a full-page photo. And it's all in bronze and coffee tones, very warm tones, and golden tones, very golden tones, yeah. And it is inside what we're told is Preservation Hall. The background has a window. There are two long 12 Yeah, 12 paned windows that appear to be to open out like plantation shutters might. But they're not open. They're closed, and there's a blurred background that appears to be a mountainside in autumn in the background. You can't see much of it, though, because it's lit. The inside of Preservation Hall is lit with golden lights, and there are paintings and travel posters in the background. Here's an old ad that says traditional Pepsis, I think, $5. Others, $10. The seats, $20. Okay. Yeah. All right. Traditional repast. That's what it might be. Excuse me, listeners. Okay. And that's the only thing I can read in the background. There are other things as well on the golden walls in the background. And in the foreground, we've got a jazz band. And I know that because on the big bass drum, it says Preservation Hall Jazz Band, New Orleans, Louisiana. There are three African-American gentlemen sitting here. There was one playing the drums that I mentioned. It's a great drum set there. He has a purple hat upon his head, tight. Might be a scarf of some sort. And he's got a lavender tailored shirt and a espresso-colored vest over that. And he's playing the drums. Closer in the foreground, one gentleman on the left-hand side of this photo, sitting in a chair, playing a sax. It appears to be a tenor sax. It's got golden tones because of lighting, perhaps. And he's wearing navy blue trousers and a pink shirt buttoned over another a pink jacket buttoned over another shirt. He has gray hair, and he's blowing on that sax. And in the other chair is a man wearing glasses and wearing a straw hat, and he has on a print, kind of, it looks to be an African print of espresso and coffee au lait, those two tones. And he has on bright green, Kelly green trousers. Both gentlemen are wearing brown lace-up shoes. And this man is blowing on his trumpet. All right. New Orleans, Louisiana Preservation Hall. The Crescent City's most iconic music venue is getting bigger and better this year. One of the charms of Preservation Hall is that it has hardly changed since it became a hot spot for jazz in 1961. From the wooden benches to the songs performed in the small concert hall. This year, an ambitious project will keep that history alive while providing room for it to grow. A new space adjacent to the original building will add 7,000 square feet for shows, exhibitions, and more. This building also has a storied past. It was formerly La Spectacle, the city's first theater, which was built in 1791. No. And this is in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's the Grand Old Opry. You're invited to the Music Institution's 100th anniversary. When a country radio show called the WSM Barn Dance first aired in 1925, no one could have imagined that it would evolve into Nashville's most legendary showcase for musicians. Over the past 100 years, the Mother Church of Country Music has seen every evolution of the genre. From Bill Monroe to up-and-comers like Charlie Crockett. To celebrate the Opry 100, we'll offer a year of special tours, tribute concerts, debut performances, and more. And now we're on to Orlando, Florida. Yeah, you guessed it, listeners, I think. Universal Epic Universe. Prepare to be thrilled by an out-of-this-world amusement park. Set to open in May, Universal Epic Universe has five worlds that together offer 50 unique experiences. Guests will go through the Chironos portal into the Celestial Park. That might be Chronos portal. Excuse me, listener. Chronos. The Chronos portal into the Celestial Park, featuring a constellation-themed carousel, an interactive fountain and splash pad, and a dual launch coaster called Stardust Racers. Four more portals lead to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, Ministry of Magic, How to Train Your Dragon, Isle of Berk, Super Nintendo World, and Dark Universe. Stay inside the resort at the Universal Helios Grand Hotel. Well, this one's a little might be closer to your home. We'll say it's Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. The Dolly Parton Experience. And past episodes, we've heard a little of that, haven't we, listeners? All right, say hello to Dolly like never before. It might sound strange, but up until recently, Dollywood was a little short on the country star herself. Sure, her spirit and songs permeate every corner of the famous park. But since its museum, Chasing Rainbows, closed in 2021, there hasn't been an area dedicated to all things Dolly. Thankfully, a new attraction remedies that and then some. Three times the size of the old museum, it tells her story through three interactive exhibits. Songteller, her life and career. Behind the Seams, and that's S-E-A-M-S, her iconic style and wardrobe. And Precious Memories, a tribute to her friends and family. And our last one here, listeners, is in Shelleyville, Tennessee. Humble Baron. Toast a legendary bourbon maker at the longest bar in the world. And there's a small photo of that here, listeners, of the bar. It's a horseshoe-shaped bar with simple backless bar stools, brown bar stools around it. This, too, has a coffee-colored theme to it, this photo. But in the background of the bar, there's an HB for Humble Baron logo. Against a red curtain, painting of red curtains, or they could be real curtains, I couldn't tell. And there are some windows in the background as well, and it's a dimly lit, again, espresso-colored or espresso-toned bar. With 202 stools and a counter spanning 518 feet, the bar at Humble Baron is so long, it set a Guinness World Record. The sight of it alone is enough of a reason to grab a drink here, but this place is historic in more ways than one. It is located at Nearest Green Distillery, named for Nathan Nearest, quote-unquote, Green, the first known African-American master distiller. While Jack Daniel is a name even teetotalers recognize, fewer people know that Green taught Daniel how to make whiskey and later became his first master distiller. You can read all about it in the fascinating book Love and Whiskey by Fawn Weaver, founder of the Uncle Nearest brand. Green would likely be proud of the award-winning bottles being produced today. You can taste them at Humble Baron, where beverage director Akinde Olagundoye and his team mix up classic cocktails and create new ones. And we've got time for one more, actually, listeners. This is in LaGrange, Georgia. It's Hills and Dales Estate. Discover heaven on earth for garden and architecture fans. And there's a majestic structure here. If we have time, we'll describe that picture a little more. It's a big, majestic estate among green gardens, among greenery, a lot of greenery. All right, you're likely familiar with Callaway Resort and Gardens, the azalea-filled property in Pine Mountain, Georgia. Founded in 1952 by textile magnate Cason J. Callaway and his wife, Virginia. It has grown to include restaurants, a lodge, a spa, and more. But the Callaway legacy doesn't end there. About 40 minutes away is a lesser-known yet equally beautiful treasure. Their former family home, Hills and Dales Estate. The 1916 Georgian-Italian villa is famous for its boxwoods, camellias, and orchids. Its 1841 grounds are considered some of the best-preserved 19th-century gardens in America. With plants and flowers to view in every season, it's a wonderful place to explore. The house, which contains much of the original furniture and art, is also open to the public. And listeners, the photo of the house is above. It's enormous. It's a huge estate, and it's got columns. Gee, I should know the kind of architecture this is here, but I don't. It's got long columns that come from the roof to the floor, the roof of the second-story building to the floor on one side where there's a little portico. And it's got arborvitae, those trees are, I think, or cypress trees. Can't tell the difference. And a lot of many neat hedges and rows of might be hosta or it might be some kind of fern also in the foreground. Lots and lots of greenery to smell there. All right, we have run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll join us next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, but you will find it listed under specials and TRB. Temporarily, that's where it's listed. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once more, that's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.